On this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we've been sharing stories of reunions and what it means to come together, even after something unthinkable happens.
When you came into the bank, you made us all lay on the floor. Can you imagine laying on the floor and all you hear is that shotgun? Clack, clack.
In our last episode of this season, how two very different reunions led to friendship, family, and second chances.
I remember hearing that if you guys talked to me, if I'd call the house, that you'd get a beating because Dad didn't want you to catch gay. And you guys believe that.
It's the StoryCorps podcast from NPR. I'm Jasmine Morris. Stay with us.
Hey, it's Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. If you're a normal Wait, Wait listener, you shout out the answers to all the questions, and then you get frustrated that no one can tell how smart you are. Here's the solution, the Wait, Wait quiz, available now on your smart speaker. Just ask your smart speaker to open the Wait, Wait quiz. Finally, your genius shall be recognized.
When people think about StoryCorps, they often think of two friends or family members coming to one of our recording booths for the conversation of a lifetime. It's 40 uninterrupted minutes with someone you love. But that's not always the case. Sometimes people come to StoryCorps to have otherwise impossible conversations. Like in our first story. In 1997, Darius Clark Monroe was a high school honor student in Houston, Texas. He'd never been in serious trouble before, but that changed shortly after his 16th birthday, when he and two of his friends robbed a bank at gunpoint. Darius was arrested in February of that year and served the next 3 years in prison. After he was released on parole in 2001, he went to college at the University of Houston and then to film school in New York. But even 20 years later, that day in the bank stayed with him. So Darius began tracking down some of the customers who were there at the time of the robbery. David Ned, a pastor and father of four, was one of them. He agreed to sit down with Darius for this StoryCorps conversation.
How did you get to that point where you said, I'm going to rob a bank?
What was happening at my house was that things weren't going well in terms of the finances. My parents were working all the time. And once they told me that we were in like $25,000, $30,000 of debt, I was thinking, how am I going to help? Because nobody else is going to come save the day. And so one day on TV, there was this guy who had robbed this bank. And I was struck by how easy it seemed.
Did you really think you was going to get away with this?
I literally thought no one would ever find out. It took almost 4 weeks before I was arrested and then sent to prison.
How many years they was giving you?
Five.
5 years.
Mm-hmm. When I got out, I wanted to apologize to the people who were inside the bank. And when I spoke to you, it was the first time I got to truly understand the seriousness of what I did.
When you came into the bank, you made us all lay on the floor. Can you imagine laying on the floor and all you hear is that shotgun? Clack, clack. Everything in me was shaking. And I kept saying to myself, it's over. I used to think I wasn't scared of nothing. They used to call me Brave Dave. I figured if anybody tried to rob me, I said, well, they're going to take my life to get my money. I don't work too hard for it. Mm-hmm. So that was hard for me because I had to come to grips with that. And one thing that helped me when you came by and asked me to forgive you years later, I thought about my son. He could have been put in jail because he's been through some stuff. But should he ever turn his life around, I would like that somebody he may have taken advantage of would give him a second chance.
It has been incredible to be given a second, third, fourth shot and having you be a part. This has given me hope.
I'm really proud of you. And I don't know if you've got a good relationship with your dad, but if you don't, he's the one that missed out on a great son. And I'm here to do whatever it is I need to do. 17 years later, to help you be a great young man.
That's David Ned and Darius Clark Monroe. They still talk regularly, and have grown even closer since they recorded their StoryCorps interview in 2014. Darius went on to reunite with a few others who were in the bank that day and even made a documentary about it. It's called Evolution of a Criminal. After this quick break, how one brother, the oldest of eight, gave his siblings a second chance at family. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps. Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from the all-new three-row Subaru Ascent. There's room for 7 or 8 passengers and a choice of second-row captain's chairs or bench seating. The Ascent also features standard symmetrical all-wheel drive for added confidence in all-weather conditions. The Subaru Ascent. Love is now bigger than ever. Learn more at Subaru.com.
Hey, listeners, since this is the final episode of our season on reunions, we wanted to take the opportunity to connect with all of you and hear your thoughts on the StoryCorps podcast. Please take a short anonymous survey at npr.org/StoryCorps survey, all one word, and let us know what you liked, what you didn't like, and what you want to hear more of on future seasons. The survey only takes a few minutes, and your opinion matters. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you. Speaking of getting in touch, our next story starts with brothers who'd been out of touch for a long time. Brian Wilmoth, his brother Mike, and their 6 siblings were raised in a strict religious household in Central California. Brian was the eldest, the quintessential big brother. But when Brian was 19, their dad kicked him out.
Dad found a love letter from a guy in my box of things, and he read this letter and lost it. He took me for a ride and dropped me off in the middle of the night with a $5 bill. That's sort of all I remember, sleeping outside in the country that night. And I really missed my brothers and sisters when I left home. I remember hearing that if you guys talked to me, if I'd call the house, that you'd get a beating because Dad didn't want you to catch gay. And you guys believed that.
Granted, it was a fear-based belief.
Of course, but, you know, it was still something I had to try to fix. And so as each of you guys moved out or got kicked out of the house—
Or ran away
in your case, I would make an effort to try to contact you guys and be a big brother again. At first, you were really resistant. You didn't know anything about gay people.
Didn't want to.
And it took a long time for our relationship to build. But after you started to accept it, every time you met another gay person, you would say, oh, you've got to meet my brother and hook me up with every guy that you thought was gay. You know, I always thought that was really sweet. And that's when we started coming back together, you know, as brothers and sisters, Brian, Pam, Chris, Mike, Jude, Amy, Josh, and Luke Henry. Now, Luke Henry, I didn't even know because he wasn't born till I was like 19 or 20, and I hadn't seen him in ever. And I got a call, and the voice on the other end said, Brian, this is your little brother, Luke. By this time, you know, he was estranged from mom and dad, and he wanted to go to University of Dallas. So I took my savings, which wasn't a lot. And I bought 1 one-way ticket and 1 round-trip ticket to Dallas. Now, mind you, this is a Catholic school, and I'm the big gay brother. I'm running around getting him set up for his dorm room, and we go through this whole weekend, and at the end, I gave Luke a hug and a kiss and told him how much I loved him, and he started walking away. I was just watching after him like, wow, I really finally got to be a big brother. And at that moment, he turned around and mouthed, I love you. It was the most beautiful moment I had ever experienced. And I called you from the hotel, sobbing. Do you remember this?
Yeah. You brought 8 siblings that were so far apart to be as close as we all became.
I just want you to know how much you mean to me, that you've loved me like this. And for that, I will be forever grateful. It is what I built the foundation of the rest of my life on.
And let me say that 40 minutes is not enough. I could do this for 4 hours, 4 days, 4 months. You're a good man.
Well, thank you, Mike.
That's Brian Wilmoth and his younger brother, Michael. Since their StoryCorps conversation first aired in 2013, thousands of listeners have reached out to Brian, offering their support and gratitude. He's heard from parents and children alike, and other young people who've come out and lost family along the way. As a social worker, Brian says he tries to connect people to resources whenever he can. He's still close with his siblings and welcomes a reunion with his father if the possibility ever presents itself. That's it for this episode and for this season of the StoryCorps podcast. We'll return to your podcast feed in the spring with a new season and a new theme. We'll be sharing stories around the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots, a pivotal moment in the fight for LGBT rights. So if you or someone you know was connected to Stonewall or just has stories from that era, we want to hear from you. You can give us a call and leave us a voicemail at 301-744-TALK. That's 301-744-TALK. Until next season, you can find StoryCorps on NPR's Morning Edition every Friday. And please remember to take our short anonymous podcast survey at npr.org/StoryCorpsSurvey. This episode was produced by Judd Estee Kendall and me. Our engineer is David Herman. Script editors are Danielle Roth and Sylvie Lubau. Special thanks to Michael Garofalo, Chayla Herridge-Meyer, and Sophia Simon-Ortiz. For the StoryCorps podcast, I'm Jasmine Morris. Until next season, thanks for listening.